Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome.
I don't know what happened to the music. I don't know what happened.
It sounds so weird without it.
Congressman Kinzinger?
Yeah, his walk-up music.
It's usually...
No, nothing? Is it running on your side? Because it's not running on this side.
He needs that.
I know.
It gives him a lot of confidence to be on the air with us.
You can't perform this.
I got nothing
without this music.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, man.
It's just like happening. This is just happening all of a sudden. Okay, well, I'm here.
This is what death is like.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I don't know. I don't know what happened, man. All right. We don't need the music. We don't need no stinking music. All right. So, Congressman M. Kinzinger. First of all, a number of things that we have to get to here. I know you got a vote coming up. Congratulations.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's actually congratulations,
you.
But you have just been appointed as a House conferee for the opioid legislation. That is interesting because it seems like there's so much of the fallout from the death of Prince involved in this, right? The kind of pushing. This was already in the pipeline, but this is pushing it through?
Yeah, it was already in the pipeline, but, you know— I don't know if the Prince death really helped push us through. It's kind of interesting timing, though, and it's kind of a reinforcement timing. You know, like in my district, especially in, you know, the Rockford area and frankly in the middle of the district, you hear all the time about, you know, kids that are falling, that are dying from opioid use. And, you know, what'll happen is they'll start, you know, taking an oxy or something like that, and then they take two, and then, you know, they can't get the same effect again, so they take more. And then eventually it's an easy transition then to go to heroin, and that's what's happening. And so, you know, the question is how do we ensure that the people that need these pain prescriptions are getting them but keep them out of the hands of the wrong people? You know, one of the ideas is, look, you know, how do you keep people from doctor shopping? How do you have a database that shows if you just went to a different store and filled your prescription, you know, if it's across state lines yesterday and then today you have a new one? So, you know, this is what's going to be worked out in conference. We'll hopefully take a real dent on some of this abuse. Yeah. But it really comes down to a choice of parents and families to ensure that you're watching your kids.
What's the evidence out there, Congressman, about where teenagers are largely getting their opioids from? Are they stealing prescriptions? Are they taking their parents' drugs? Or where do you see the sources?
It's really all the above, but it's also really easy to buy on the street. It's expensive, and interestingly, heroin is cheaper now than marijuana if you buy it on the street because, you know, oversupply and everything else. But yeah, I mean, it's really all the above. People are finding ways to get a hold of this. I heard somebody say, and I don't know if it's actually true, but a special overheard it saying basically that it's easier to buy opioids than a pack of cigarettes for minors. And that's a frightening thing.
Mm. Always the illicit is always easier, right, than the regulated legal. Seems to be the case. All right, now let's talk about the president in Asia, and he's lifting. Yesterday, he lifted the lethal arms ban of sale of lethal arms to Vietnam. I'll get that right eventually.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like a Walter Jacobson perspective. It's one word built on the other. What is the what do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a good thing. You know, I think it reflects our, frankly, bettering relationship with Vietnam. You know, Vietnam is a important ally now. Also, you know, they have issues with China and, you know, China trying to, in essence,
for 6,000 years, by the way, somebody might want to mention that because we got in the middle of that in the late 1950s. And they're like, the French were like, don't do this. And we're like, we got this.
They're like, we're out. Yeah. And, you know, we fought heroically there, and frankly, I think we had Vietnam won, but, you know, then obviously we know we left, and then you had the North Vietnamese re-engage, and then we didn't engage with them. But, you know, regardless, reflecting the new reality, they're an important ally for us, and I think this reflects where we're at today. And so I agree with the president's decision to lift the arms embargo, and this is part of leveraging our allies, you know, to do the work that we don't necessarily want just United States Marines to do. So to be able to have allies on our side, you know, in essence, willing to have soft power and posture, keeps it much less likely that Americans will find themselves engaged someday in combat.
It is interesting when you have, you know, over time, is scarring and awful and probably more divisive of a foreign war in America there has not been other than Vietnam. And
right.
It is, and to see this happening now, and they're a trading partner, right?
Yeah.
You look at your sneakers; they're all made in Vietnam. You look at your underwear; it's made in Vietnam, right?
I mean, yeah, And the other interesting thing is kind of a they have a very natural, I haven't been to Vietnam, I want to go, but they have a natural affection towards us. I was talking to John McCain, and he actually said, he goes to Vietnam all the time, and he said he is more recognized in Vietnam than he is in Arizona. And it's very interesting, and they love him, you know, because they obviously are not proud of what they did to him, but they, you know, they have an affection to him. And
yeah,
so the attitudes are very different than, you know, what you obviously saw during the Vietnam War.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. All right. And we were talking to a guy yesterday about the fall, rise and fall of Ramadi. This guy is an army colonel, has written a book about it. And now there's talk about what's happening in Syria. I just wonder from your perspective, Congressman, when you look at what's happening in the Middle East and you're starting to see like Ramadi fall away from ISIS and go back to the Iraqi nationals, at least for the moment, there's not much of Ramadi to take back. Right. It's pretty much a leveled city. And it would be at least a decade to rebuild infrastructure there. But they do seem to be a little on the run, ISIS.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Well, yeah, it depends. So Fallujah is going to be an interesting one to watch because, you know, you have the Iraqi military beginning an offensive there. They've cleared out some of the early booby traps. They've sustained some casualties. But it is a much better Iraqi army now with Americans stiffening their spine as well as a better trained officer corps. You know, it's taken a couple years. We've reengaged with them. And so it'll be interesting to see how the battle for Fallujah goes. And if they're able to liberate the city of Fallujah, that's a very good sign, because obviously Mosul's the big fight. Mosul's, you know, 1 million, 2 million people. And that's going to be the next big fight probably after Fallujah. So, yeah, I mean, it's fatiguing. It's tiring. But when you look at the great, you know, length of human history, while it seems to us everything's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, I think, you know, when you have the view of 100 years from now looking back, you'll see a transition period that, you know, left a lot of seesaw battles, but hopefully in the end let a fairly stable and democratic Iraq. You know, a lot of concerns with Shia influence, with Iranian influence. But the Iraqis they want to be a nation. They want to be a nation that, you know, can deal with its ethnic issues, and hopefully they get there. I have some optimism, but I've had my optimism kind of scarred before with them.
Haven't you had it just scarred in Washington?
Isn't
it
just,
probably gets very
too.
Scarred there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And then when you watch the national scene, and then you end up on Wolf Blitzer, and Wolf Blitzer's like, Congressman Kinzinger, tell me exactly why it is that Donald Trump is the Republican nominee, and you have to, and you can't answer the question.
Crickets.
Isn't that scarring?
Crickets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
But you know, it's an interesting time. I mean, this is even in this election, it's one of those moments we're going to look back on in 10, 15 years and be like, wow, that was historic, regardless of how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be able to learn a lot.
Mm-hmm. Again,
yeah, so,
again, Congressman Kinzinger, why is it that Donald Trump is the Republican nominee?
Because he received more votes.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
I guess that's one answer. All right. Thank you, Congressman.
Thanks, Congressman.
You bet, guys. Take care.
All right. There he goes. No music. He didn't need it to.
I
know. Look, he brought it.
He kind of did. He does bring it, but I think it adds something when we have the walk-up music. We'll find it. We'll get it for next time.
We're getting that fixed right now. I can tell right now what's going on.
Just make sure we have it for Carrie Wood on Thursday.
Oh, we're not going to have music for the rest of the show. I'm going to play off my iPod pad.
Okay. Pod pad.
What is this thing? This is my iPhone.